Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and thank you so much for again taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast. Today is Thursday, October 31st, 2019, and it is blistering cold outside. I don't know that we're going to have very many trick-or-treaters tonight at the door because it's too cold to be scary. But I guess in many ways this cold, dark, scary, spooky night is the perfect setting, if you will, for our reading from the book Full Moon Over Loch Ness. Now, I realize I've been absent from reading to you for a couple of weeks. I had some very important interviews that had to take place on Thursday, which is set aside for reading my book. So now I'm back again, and I hope you're keeping up with the audio files of the book. Last time we met, Jeffrey Hughes had visited the grave of his deceased daughter, Allison. And in that episode, I showed how an atheist struggles with the fact that the person he loved so much, he will never, ever see again, according to his worldview. And it was in that chapter that he also discovered the news in Scotland, in Loch Ness, of a serial killer. And Jeffrey is like a crime scene forensic police officer. He loves to study crime. He loves to be a detective. And so he has made a quick decision. I must go to Loch Ness. I'll stay at a bed and breakfast, and I will write about this serial killer, and I'll also write about the Loch Ness creature and monster legend. So what we're doing today in Full Moon Over Loch Ness is beginning Chapter 4, The Journey Begins, and I will begin reading for you. Delta Flight 497 soared across the Atlantic Ocean at a cruising altitude of 35,000 feet. The 757 had left New York just an hour earlier, bound for Edinburgh, Scotland, more than 10 hours away. Jeffrey Hughes relaxed back in his seat and gazed out the cabin window, admiring the stellar blue and white clouds hovering over the stormy Atlantic far below. He took a quick sip of tea and opened up his tablet. Jeffrey still couldn't believe the incredible circumstances that had led to the present adventure he was now embarking on. Besides writing philosophical and theological works refuting the Christian theistic worldview, Jeffrey loved playing detective with crime scene stories. He grew up reading detective magazines and swore that one day he would take a degree in forensic science. But then his world collapsed with the death of his daughter, Allison. Jeffrey took a nervous deep breath. He leaned back in his seat to relax once again. He could still see in his mind's eye the face of his precious daughter in the morgue. It was still much too painful. He thought back to the news report about the McKenzie family and how their world was shattered too when the police found their daughter's research vessel drifting in Loch Ness and no sign of Fiona. It amazed Jeffrey how ironically similar the circumstances to Fiona's disappearance was so much like what had happened to his daughter Allison. Both daughters had mysteriously vanished from their boats. Jeffrey could truly feel their pain. He understood what the McKenzie family was going through. Wiping his reading glasses off with a handkerchief, Jeffrey returned back to reality and clicked open a link about Loch Ness. The link opened and he began reading. More than 1,500 years ago, in the great Scottish Highlands, the primitive Pict tribes had carved on a stone a figure of a creature with an elongated beak that had flippers instead of feet. They named this creature, quote, the swimming elephant. In the earliest written evidence for Nessie, the year 565 BC, St. Columbia, a Christian missionary to Scotland claimed that he witnessed a large beast about to attack a man swimming in Loch Ness. He raised his hand, invoking the name of God, and wrote that the creature immediately fled. The year 1933 was the year of the first plausible and real sighting of Nessie. A couple driving home along the Outer Bank Road of the lake spotted an enormous animal rolling and plunging on the surface of the loch. Their account was immediately published in the Inverness Courier and was reputed to be an authentic sighting of the Loch Ness Monster. In 1934, a London physicist and physician named R.E. Kenneth Wilson boasted of having the first official photograph of Nessie. The photo showed the slender neck of a creature rising out of the surface of the water. Upon examining the photograph, many so-called experts identified Nessie as a plesiosaur, an ancient reptile thought to have gone extinct along with the other dinosaurs more than, quote, 65 million years ago. It wasn't until 1994 that the photograph was discovered to be a fake. The man who claimed to be a physician turned out instead to be Alistair Boyd, a former art and English teacher. Upon a closer examination of the photograph, it was apparent that a 12-inch figure made out of plastic and wood had been painted gray and fastened down upon a toy model submarine sitting in a tub of water. Now, actually, wanted to update you, they actually took this figurine and they placed it on the lake so it would have an authentic setting. After many years of thorough research, experts had concluded that the sightings of Nessie were psychologically conditioned and not real. It was conceded that the 1933 showing of the movie King Kong had created hysteria. There is a scene in the movie where a long-necked, humped-back lake creature emerges from underwater, frightening the tourists on an island. Ironically, the first claimed sighting of Nessie occurred in August of 1933, at the same time King Kong was playing at the cinemas in the UK. So evidently, people that flocked to see this new movie were affected in a psychological way by the creature, and now they claim to see that same creature at Loch Ness. Well, Jeffrey chuckled and took a quick sip of tea, relaxing back in his seat. He agreed with the conclusion of the experts. Just like the early Christians that had been psychologically conditioned to believe that they had seen Jesus after his death, so the people in Inverness believed they too had seen something that didn't exist. Closing out the link, Jeffrey clicked on another link that described the majesty of Loch Ness. Resting upon a fault line that splits the north of Ireland down the middle, the enormous lake known as Loch Ness is located at the end of the Great Glen between a steep-sided valley. 40 small rivers and streams empty into the Great Loch that was carved out from the Ice Age millions of years ago. Loch Ness stretches out to a length of 23 miles and is 1 mile wide with a maximum depth of 745 feet. Features of the loch are dark and murky, colored like a great abyss, and maintain an average temperature of 42 degrees. Jeffrey turned off his tablet and rested comfortably back in his seat. His mind was tired, and he was desperately in need of some much-needed sleep. He wanted to be pleasant and sociable when he met the Mackenzie family for the first time. Edinburgh was still 9 hours away, and it was time to turn off his mind for some rest and relaxation. Bonnie Blakely eased up on the accelerator as her shiny red Fiat rounded a sharp curve in scenic Highway A-82. Highway A-82 was a world-famous highway located in the beautiful Scottish Highlands where tourists flocked every spring to enjoy a breathtaking drive surrounded by mountains and gorgeous green fern trees drooping their limbs above the roadway. The highway featured sharp and challenging curves for anxious drivers passing through the famous Ben Nevis mountain range, standing majestically in the background as an awe-inspiring sight for tourists. Bonnie closed her window and brushed through her short red hair, gazing out at the grand sight of the Loch Ness Lake to the left of her driver's side. She was just 30 minutes from home in the city of Inverness. Today had been a very busy doing photographs for an upcoming wedding, and the family of the bride had insisted on taking some scenic shots along the highway with the beautiful mountain range in the background. Being a photographer was the passion of Bonnie's life, and she earned good money for the many hours she had to spend doing special outdoor location shootings. Leaning back to relax as her Fiat raced down the picturesque highway with a breathtaking view of the lake on her driver's side, Bonnie turned on the radio just in time to hear her favorite artist, Adele, fill the car with soaring vocals from her smash hit song, Hello. Bonnie began to sing along and then burst into laughter, struggling to hit the high notes. Suddenly, her karaoke moment with Adele was rudely interrupted by a thumping coming from the driver's side of the car. The Fiat began shaking and vibrating. Bonnie slammed her hand against the steering wheel. Damn it! She shouted out loud in frustration, abruptly turning off the radio. Quickly pulling the Fiat off to the side of the road, Bonnie brought her Fiat to an abrupt halt and then turned off the ignition key. The thumping had stopped. She took an angry deep breath and then opened up the door and was greeted with a cold and chilly breeze in her face blowing in from the lake. Oh, no, damn it, Bonnie screamed in protest, gazing down at the flat tire. With a swift kick, she slammed her right foot up against the tire in frustration and then sat back down in the driver's seat, contemplating what to do next. The clock on the dashboard read 5:45 p.m. It would be sunset in less than an hour, and she was still more than 20 miles from home. Bonnie pulled her cell phone out of her purse and speed dialed her husband's number at the office. Taking another angry deep breath, she waited patiently for her answer. After 6 rings, it went into voicemail. Slamming down the phone in the seat next to her, Bonnie laid her head up against the steering wheel in despair. She had never changed a flat tire before, and today, well, that was not a good day to start learning. The sound of an approaching car startled Bonnie. Immediately, she lifted her head back up and flung open the door. In the distance, about a quarter of a mile, she could see a silver car, a Mazda 6, quickly approaching. Quickly, Bonnie flung her hands excitedly in the air, motioning for the car to stop. The Mazda recognized her standing beside the Fiat and began slowing down. Bonnie leaned up back against the door frame as the Mazda carefully pulled up directly beside her. The driver turned off the ignition and opened up his door. He was a tall man, about 6 feet tall, wearing a blue jean jacket and dressed in brown khaki pants. Bonnie began to walk toward his car. The stranger climbed out from his car and looked toward the flat tire. He slowly began walking towards her. Bonnie noticed he was walking with a distinctive limp, favoring his left leg. "Ma'am, it looks like you've ran into some bad luck with that flat tire. May I help you?" he said with a polite tone in his voice and a warm smile in his face. "Oh, please, kind sir, thank you for stopping. I hope I'm not impositioning you," Bonnie replied respectfully. "I tried calling my husband, well, but he just didn't answer his cell phone." The stranger gave Bonnie another warm smile. "No problem. It's getting late. You wouldn't want to be here after dark." Bonnie nodded her head in agreement and began to chuckle. No, of course not. An uneasy feeling began to grip her soul, but Bonnie shrugged it off, anxious to get home as soon as possible. "The stranger seems like a very pleasant and well-mannered man," Bonnie reasoned within herself. "Oh, come on, get a grip," she reassures herself. "It will all be over in a few minutes, and then I will be on my way. Let me go get some tools from the trunk, and I promise you will be soon on your way," the stranger promised her. Bonnie took a relaxing deep breath. She felt much better now. The stranger slowly limped back toward the trunk of his car. Bonnie was fascinated how meticulously he favored his left leg and wondered what was his problem. She leaned up against her car and began humming Adele's Hello song once again. The stranger opened the trunk of the car with his key and peered down toward the spare tire and the jack. He slowly opened up a brown paper sack and pulled out a handful of white cotton gauze. He peered out over the lid of the trunk for a moment and watched Bonnie happily singing out loud to herself. The stranger looked toward her with a sinister smile on his face. Then he looked back down inside the dark trunk. Lifting a plastic bottle out from the bag, he slowly removed the cap and doused the gauze in chloroform. Sweat began to pour down his face. He began to feel short of breath and became dizzy. Shooting pains gripped his forehead, and he struggled to keep his balance. The stranger shook his head, withering in pain while still holding on to the chloroform soaked gauze in his hand. After a few moments, he finally composed himself and closed the lid of the trunk. Bonnie was still happily singing out loud to herself as the stranger began to approach her car. Suddenly, Bonnie caught a glimpse of him out of the corner of her eye. Her face blushed red with embarrassment. She burst into laughter. "Oh, my, you heard me trying to sing," Bonnie exclaimed, leaning back against her car in laughter. "That's okay," the stranger answered, slowly approaching her with the tire iron in his left hand. "Singing helps me relax. Go on. I love hearing you sing." "Really?" Bonnie said with an astonished look on her face. "You're the first person to give me a compliment on my singing." Bonnie stepped aside as the stranger reached the flat tire. He knelt down and carefully examined the tread around the flat. "Looks like a big nail caused it. Do you see?" Bonnie bent down and followed the direction of his finger. "Oh, yes, now I see it," Bonnie explained as she bent down closer to where the nail of the head had punctured her tire. The stranger stood up next to her. Bonnie slowly began to stand up when she felt a strong hand cover her mouth. She desperately tried to break the stranger's grip and scream. A foul odor filled her nostrils, and her lungs began to burn. Within a few seconds, her body went limp. She stopped fighting and collapsed into the stranger's arms. The stranger scanned up and down the road, making sure there was no other cars coming. Quickly, he began dragging her body across the gravel road and laid her down on the ground and next to his car. His hands shaking, the stranger nervously fumbled for his keys and opened up the trunk. He bent down again and lifted up Bonnie's limp body, hurriedly stuffing her in the trunk and slamming down the lid. He paused for a moment to catch his breath and then covered his forehead with both of his hands, overcome by the shooting pains. Quickly opening up the driver's side door, he slumped down in the seat and quickly started the engine. Red and orange rays were streaming across the horizon, painting a beautiful sunset. The stranger leaned back in his seat and closed his eyes. Suddenly, he felt good once again. Another woman would soon become his slave, and that brought pleasure and satisfaction to his soul. And exhausted and weary, Jeffrey Hughes stood on the platform of Waverley Railroad Station in Edinburgh, Scotland. Jet lag was already beginning to set in, and Jeffrey was anxious for a nap once he got aboard the train. His plane had landed on time at the airport. A taxi had quickly taken him to the railway station. It was now 12:45 a.m. The last sip of wine and a delicious strip steak had been more than 5 hours ago, and Jeffrey was starving. The ScotRail to the city of Inverness would take about 4 hours, and check-in time at the bed and breakfast would be at 9 a.m. Jeffrey glanced down at the watch again when the overhead page for ScotRail 466 to Inverness was announced. Grabbing his suitcase and overnight bag, Jeffrey boarded the train and got his ticket punched. The passenger list for this late at night was less than 100. It was very quiet, with only a few people aboard ahead of him in line. Arriving at his window seat, Jeffrey reached up above his head and pulled open the luggage compartment. The steward, with a typical Scottish Gaelic accent, greeted him properly. "Good morning, sir. Welcome aboard, ScotRail. My name is Darren, and I will be serving you. Would you like something to drink?" Jeffrey sat down in his seat next to the window and took a deep breath. The taste of sweet tea was appealing to him at this time of the morning. "Thank you, Darren. I believe I will have some sweet tea." "Yes, sir. Right away, sir." There was a sudden jolt, and ScotRail departed from Waverley Railway Station right on time at 1 a.m. The engineer greeted the passengers on the overhead page, informing them of their arrival of 5:30 a.m. at Inverness. Jeffrey relaxed back in his seat and closed his heavy eyelids. It had been a very long day, and he needed a good sleep before his Scottish adventure began. Just as he had begun to drift off to sleep, Darren returned with a glass of tea, carrying a newspaper in his hand. "I thought maybe you would like to catch up on the news," Darren explained as he handed Jeffrey the newspaper. Jeffrey quickly paid Darren in cash and took the newspaper from his hands. Immediately, his eye caught the headline article on the front page. "Another woman has gone missing in Inverness. The abandoned red Fiat automobile of Bonnie Barclay was found on the side of the road 20 miles from the city limits. Police fear she may have been abducted by the full moon serial killer." Jeffrey removed his reading glasses and rubbed his tired red eyes. He realized that he may not be getting a lot of sleep while in Scotland. He was determined to use his detective skills and find the psychopath that was terrorizing the good people of Inverness. The local police may not appreciate some American traveling thousands of miles and interfering in their investigation, but Jeffrey couldn't resist. Crime scene investigation was in his blood. Closing his eyes, Jeffrey struggled to turn off his mind for just a few hours. He needed to be awake and fresh for the adventure of his life. And that concludes our reading of Chapter 4 in my book, Full Moon over Loch Ness. In this chapter, I have introduced Loch Ness to you. I've introduced the legend of the Loch Ness monster. I've introduced Jeffrey as a crime scene investigator, not just an atheist who writes books to debate Christians, but someone who is intrigued by this serial killer. And in this chapter, I took you inside of the mind of this dark, evil, ominous being, as once again he finds a way to abduct women for his full moon ritual. And so I've taken you from Jeffrey in the plane to the stranger abducting a woman, and then Jeffrey again reading about another victim. And in this chapter, what I've tried to do is to introduce to you the future meeting of Jeffrey and this serial killer. And that's why I wrote this chapter in this way, with Jeffrey on the plane, then the serial killer, and now Jeffrey again. So you will probably conclude, well, I don't know what exactly is going to happen next, but it seems like that the author is hinting at the fact that very soon Jeffrey and this serial killer will cross paths. Well, you're going to find out, because next Thursday I will begin reading Chapter 5. Just to give you a little preview, Chapter 5 is very important. And I don't want to give you all the details other than the fact that I'm going to be introducing another main character in the book. She is a young Scottish Christian girl, and she is an amazing person. And I'm going to just say this, from now on in to the book, we're going to focus in on Jeffrey and Grace. Their relationship is the heart of my book, Full Moon Over Loch Ness. I think you are going to really enjoy Grace and Jeffrey. I write it in such a way that it is very appealing, and it brings up many other portions of the book together. Chapter 5 is a chapter that you don't want to miss. I hope you're enjoying this book. It is a mystery. It is a thriller. It's a whodunit, if you will. It's at one of the most famous sites on the planet, Loch Ness in Inverness, Scotland. But beyond all of that, it is a Christian worldview book. And you're going to see now, beginning in Chapter 5, how I introduce the Christian worldview. An atheist is about to meet a Christian, but she is not any ordinary Christian. And I think you'll enjoy it as the book gets to the heart of the Christian worldview in the next chapter. If you're interested in reading the book from cover to cover, all you have to do is go up to Amazon.com, type in Full Moon Over Loch Ness, Randy L. Noble, N-O-B-L-E, and you can purchase my book and enjoy it. This is a book you want to give to your atheist friend, your skeptic friend. I think you'll enjoy it. I want you all to have a great weekend. Keep warm if you're going out tonight. God bless you, and I will see you next Monday on the cross in the desert. Have a great weekend.